Who do we believe and why? What do we take for fact or fiction? Sometimes what we think is true is related to our societal beliefs rather than science or research. For example, there is an embedded belief that shootings are tied to mental illness. The first time we see this thinking play out in actual policy is in 1968, after the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and JFK. Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Gun Control Act.
Today we begin to disarm the criminal and the careless and the insane and all of our people who are deeply concerned in this country about law and order. Should hail this day.
That barred people who'd been involuntarily committed or declared incompetent from owning guns. Neither JFK nor King were assassinated by people diagnosed with a mental illness. And I reached out to dozens of legal scholars and historians to find out why that language was put into the Gun Control Act, and I couldn't find out. They told me it was probably just accepted as fact that this would make everybody safer. Since then, lawmakers have made a lot of decisions with this assumption in mind that mental illness contributes to gun violence. But research shows, in reality, that's very rare. So why do we think it does? Nina Feldman has this story of a psychologist caught in the middle of these questions.
A couple of months ago, Amy Barnhorst got a new patient. He was an 18-year-old high school student who'd threatened to shoot up his school. And as the medical director at the UC Davis Psychiatric Hospital in California, Amy sees this type of patient a lot. It's her job to give him a psychiatric evaluation.
His reasons for doing this were kind of unclear to me, but didn't seem delusionally based or that he was acting out of paranoia. He just kind of seemed like he didn't really like the people he was at school with, and he was angry and bitter at them, and he didn't really seem very remorseful. And so my assessment of him was like, yes, this guy is definitely a serious potential for violence.
But for her to commit him, she had to be sure that he was dangerous because of a mental illness.
And this is something that comes up with school shooters a lot is, yeah, this guy was clearly at risk of violence. But was he mentally ill?
Amy says he just wasn't. She wouldn't say he was well. He was antisocial, entitled, and aggrieved. But those aren't things you deal with in an acute inpatient psychiatric hospital. They're more like personality traits, which maybe you could deal with in years and years of therapy. Therapy, which, by the way, someone has to sign up for. But even if she knew he was probably not mentally ill, Amy was in a bit of a catch-22.
If we do release him also, then what? You know, if this were a much lower risk situation, I probably would have sent the person out and discharged them and said, you know, you don't meet criteria. If you're wrong about a school shooter, it's really bad.
In the end, she admitted him. But he appealed his case, and a hearing officer had to decide whether or not he posed a threat because of a mental illness.
And in this case, the hearing officer said, no, I don't believe he does. And so they let him go.
If you look at the research, only about 4% of violence in this country is caused by mental illness. 4%. But despite that,
you know, particularly in the aftermath of mass shootings, we always want to know, like, why didn't the mental health system catch this?
This is Beth McGinty. She researches policy that deals with mental health and violence at Johns Hopkins.
And we think, like, what in the world? Like, how did they miss this?
But if mental illness isn't causing violence, well, then they didn't miss anything. Whatever's making this person violent, maybe it's not theirs to miss. Beth says the mental health system should not be in the business of figuring out who's going to be dangerous.
The research evidence just very clearly shows that psychiatrists are not very good at predicting violence. And it's not because they're not doing their job. It's because violent behavior is very rare overall among people with mental illness. It's hard to predict rare events.
That's not to say violence is never caused by mental illness. And when it is, it gets a lot of attention. These high-profile examples stick in people's minds.
And this is a Fox News alert. U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords of Arizona was shot outside a grocery store in Tucson.
After that shooting in 2011, gunman Jared Loughner was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Psychologists said his delusions were causing him to feel threatened and act violently. The shooters in the Aurora, Colorado movie theater and at Virginia Tech were both suffering from mental illness, too. The research shows we do need to keep guns out of the hands of people who are dangerous because of a mental illness. That does keep everyone safer. But Beth says that doesn't mean we should think of everyone with mental illness as potentially dangerous.
Linking mental illness with violence, that increases public perceptions of the dangerousness of this population. And that stigma leads to discriminatory behaviors. People don't want to hire somebody with mental illness. They don't want to have somebody with mental illness marry into their family, that sort of thing.
And still, people make these sweeping statements blaming gun violence on mental illness all the time.
Mental health is your problem here. This was based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual.
It's fair to say that anybody who does this has a sickness in their minds.
I don't believe that this insane monster should have ever been able to obtain a firearm. This individual was nuts.
But Beth says she gets why we do this. We're eager for an explanation, and mental illness gives us one.
We want to be able to say, this was what the cause was, and so here are some solutions to address that cause. When there is another clearly identified cause, extremism, for example, we don't jump to this mental illness narrative.
Think about violence related to terrorism, or hate crimes, or domestic disputes. We're not so quick to blame mental illness in those cases.
And often the reality is that the causes of violent behavior are very complex. You can't sort of nail down one specific thing, and that is not very satisfying.
Back at the psych hospital in California, Amy Barnhorst gets this too. And of course, she wants to keep people safe. But she still doesn't think admitting people she knows aren't mentally ill is the way to do it.
I'm filling my 50-bed inpatient hospital with people that I'm not really able to treat. I'm making those beds unavailable for people who are actually really mentally ill and need to be here. I'm sending maybe a larger message that, yeah, send all those people over to me. I'll just put them on the inpatient unit and have them hang out there until they settle down or something changes. I'm not sure what.
This story was reported by Nina Feldman. And Nina, what I'm wondering about now is if mental illness is not the best way to predict whether someone is going to be violent, what are some things that could help us figure that out instead?
Yeah, so what we actually know based on the evidence is that the best indicator for future violence is a history of violence. So that's why some states are using background checks to flag for violent misdemeanors. So if you've committed a violent misdemeanor, that would come up in a background check and you'll be prevented from buying a gun. Another thing is that alcoholism is really highly correlated with violence. So that can be difficult to measure, but the way they're doing it in some places is if you have a handful of DUIs in a short period of time, say 3 DUIs or DWIs in 5 years or so, well, then that would revoke your ability to buy a gun or own a gun. So yes, in some states, they are starting to think about measuring that risk in other terms, not just by mental illness.
Thank you, Nina.
Yeah, thank you, Mikan.